Blog. Welcome to Right Now. I'm your host, Stacey Chabot, coming to you live from Las Vegas.
Join me tonight is Sufit, recently featured in Entrepreneur Magazine. Sufit is the author of the hot new book, Step Into the Spotlight, A Guide to Getting Noticed. Sufit has been described by the Toronto Star as a starburst of energy, bright, bubbly, and upbeat, and by Publishers Weekly as a coaching dynamo. And her book, Step Into the Spotlight, has been endorsed by Tom Peters, Jay Conrad Livingston, Jack Trout, BNI founder, and Ivan Meisner. A singer, television actress, and comedian, and the subject of hundreds of featured newspaper articles, television, and radio appearances internationally, Sufit has appeared doing stand-up comedy and nightclubs and on national TV and has appeared on television and film commercials internationally. Sufit coaches entrepreneurs, business owners, authors, speakers, and CEOs to catapult their brands and themselves into a starring role. She teaches her clients to get seen, get heard, and get noticed. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Sufit.
My pleasure.
Sufit, what do you mean when you say all business is show business?
Well, show business is the business of telling stories and selling stories. And show business also understands that it can't exist without an audience. The most valuable asset for anyone in show business is star qualities. And these three things are true for any business, for any entrepreneur, but not all entrepreneurs got the memo. You know, it's noisy out there in the marketplace. It's really crowded, and it's kind of like you're stuck on channel 632 and your prospects have a TV remote and they're flicking through the channels to see what's on, but they don't start at channel 632, and you can't just hope that they'll find you. It's kind of like that. You really have to figure out how to attract and hold your audience's attention, how to develop box office appeal. That's what marketing is all about. It's not enough to bake a better bagel, you know, which I call the bake it and they will come theory. You got to know how to get them lined up around the corner for those bagels.
Tell us a little bit about your background, why you chose this arena for your life's work, and why you decided to write your book, Step Into the Spotlight.
I've wanted to be on stage since I was a kid, but that wasn't very practical. So I ended up becoming a lawyer, downtown Bay Street, litigation lawyer, Dean's List, the whole thing, until one day I kind of had that Peggy Lee moment, you know, that is that all there is, you know, moment. And I decided finally it was my turn, and I left law for the limelight. I left law to be a singer, an actress, a comedian. I just had four baby daughters in 4 years. And I left the law, kept the kids, and decided to follow my dream and become an actress. And I got, you know, a few roles. I started to promote and publicize myself as an actress. I put out a music CD. And what happened was I got a lot of publicity. And pretty soon the suits came calling, you know, business people, professional people, entrepreneurs, and saying, well, how did I get all that publicity? So, you know, without any business degree, without any background in publicity or marketing or any of those things, I started coaching business people to get noticed and to get known. And then before you know it, I started to be invited to be the keynote speaker at business conferences. And I was thinking, well, why me? You know, they've got all this experience. They've got MBAs. They've got PhDs. But I realized that I got something that they didn't get. It was kind of an epiphany. I realized that all business is show business. The reason I was succeeding is because I knew how to hold an audience's attention. So now what I do is I show business how to use show business to get business. And then when I started, coaching people to do this, my coaching fee started to increase and increase and increase. And before you know it, it was more, my hourly rate was higher than it had been as a lawyer and higher than most lawyers. And so then people said to me, well, can't you just like write a book or something? Because not everybody could afford it. So I wrote a book. It's called Step Into the Spotlight, A Guide to Getting Noticed. And that way, you know, people around the world can read it and you don't have to necessarily access me directly.
Well, what can businesses learn from the world of show business?
Well, there's so many things they can learn. I mean, one is what I call the three D's of marketing, which is, number one, don't bore them. Number two, don't bore them. And number three, for God's sakes, don't bore them. There was this advertising guru, David Ogilvy, and he used to say, you can't bore people into buying. So you can't be afraid to have fun. The other things are, you have to choose a character, a persona, before you walk onto the stage. You don't go to a movie and the actor just makes up his role on the spot, or you don't go to a stage show and the actor just makes up his role, you know, when he's standing on stage. He already knows what part he's playing. But in business, I find that businesses don't usually know what part they're playing. You know, they're a coach or they're an accountant, but they don't really carve out a specific role within that. So that's one thing that business can learn from show business. Another thing is never step onto the stage with a lousy script. I go to so many conferences where people are, you know, talking and it's so boring, you know, whether they're the keynote speaker or even if you go to, you know, a networking event or a chamber of commerce and you got that 30 seconds to do your little intro, that's a little 30-second show. You have a chance to really show what you do. And if you bring a little show business into it, you'll get noticed. So, you know, you have to learn also from show business to give a great performance. Harvard did a study, and I guess they must have run out of rats and aspartame because this time they studied people. And it turns out what you say only accounts for about 7% of the impression you make on your audience. So, you know, a lot of the rest of it is how you say it. So you got to learn, you know, really how to command an audience's attention. Some people say that's how Obama got into office. He knows how to hold an audience's attention. And the other thing you can learn from show business is to attract an audience instead of chasing them. I have never once received a cold call from Madonna, you know. The other thing that they can learn from show business is that there's no show without an audience. I mean, if you put on a play and there's nobody in the audience, there's no show, right? The truth is it's the same in business, but people don't realize that. You know, people think, okay, I study for 95 years, I become an accountant or a lawyer, whatever, and they think they're an expert. Well, my definition of an expert is not somebody who knows what he knows, but somebody who's known for knowing what he knows. So you have to learn how to become spotlight worthy and how to attract an audience. And the last thing is, you know, and this is something we can learn from American Idol. I don't know if you saw it a few years back, but there was one of the competitions, the final two, was Taylor Hicks, and he's competing against Catherine McPhee, right? Catherine McPhee is beautiful, but she's kind of dime a dozen beautiful, right? She has a beautiful voice, but it's a dime a dozen beautiful voice. This guy, Taylor Hicks, he's kind of 20-something. He's got gray hair. He's got tons of personality, not as good a voice probably as hers, but he won, because he was more entertaining and he had more personality and he had a fan club and he named his fan club. So these are all lessons that entrepreneurs really should take heed of.
Very good. So isn't it enough just to be good at what you do? Isn't that enough to get you business?
Yeah, sure. If you live in a town with a population of 413 people and you're the only accountant, right? But if you move to a bustling metropolis of maybe 4,013 people, where there are 7 accountants or 7 shoemakers, all of a sudden people have a choice, right? And which one do they choose? Because they all look the same. So that's when it really becomes important to stand out. It's not enough to be good, because how do people know you're good?
So how do you become your own casting director?
Well, so when I was a kid, I used to audition for shows, and we'd be thrilled when we got to school and we saw, you know, for high school or after that for in the community theater. And we'd be thrilled when we saw the cast list and we saw what role we got. And we'd be really thrilled if we got a great role. We'd be really disappointed if we didn't get a great role. In business, you don't have to audition. You get to be your own casting director. You get to choose your role in the marketplace, and you never have to audition for business again. So you can decide, do you want to be Batman or Robin? And by the way, you know Robin's never going to get his own show, so you might as well choose Batman. Or you also get to choose your specific role in the marketplace. And you know, one of the most brilliant examples of what I'm saying right now is the Mac versus PC spots. You can see them on YouTube, or I have them on my blog as well at spotlightblog.com. So Apple has characterized a computer, which you know is usually just a gray box sitting under your desk, as these people, as these characters, as these personas. Mac is, you know, wearing a black T-shirt. He's kind of cool. He's youthful. He's artistic. PC is this, you know, kind of Charlie Brown-looking guy, bumbling with a brown suit, and he's really fussy and complicated and uncomfortable in his own skin. So that's how Apple was able to not only position themselves and be their own casting directors for themselves, and they cast themselves in the role as the cool computer company, but they also were able to position their opponent being really bumbling. So that's what you can do.
Well, what is the most common mistake?
Well, the most common mistake that entrepreneurs make, well, actually, I'll give you 3, no extra charge. The first one is they have this saying, I'm here today wearing 2 hats. You know, and I hate that expression, but if you go to a chamber of commerce at 7:30 in the morning, that's what you're going to hear. I'm here today wearing 2 hats. Like, I'm a rocket scientist and I make gift baskets on the side. And what it is a lack of focus. Because you can't fit two hats on one head. You know what? McDonald's a few years ago, I don't know if you heard about this, they started selling pizza. You know, if you were in the mood for pizza, would you throw, you know, the gang in a car and head out to McDonald's? Nobody would. It's a lack of focus. So that's one mistake, wearing two hats. Second one, they don't know what they're really selling. So even if they're only focused on selling one thing, it's usually the wrong thing. Like they think they're selling soup when really they're selling comfort. They think they're selling makeup when really they're selling confidence. You know, and sometimes even the big boys get it wrong. Coca-Cola quite a few years ago, got distracted by Pepsi into thinking it was selling taste. Pepsi did the Pepsi Challenge, and everybody said that they liked the taste of Pepsi better than Coke. So Coke made a new drink that people in blind taste tests said that they liked better than Pepsi or Coke. They called it New Coke. The result was the biggest marketing fiasco in history. It bombed, it tanked, they had to pull it off the shelf. Why? Coke forgot what it was really selling. Coke was the real thing. Coke was the American dream in a bottle. That's what Roger Enrico, he was the CEO, I think, or VP or something at Pepsi, that's what he said about Coke, about his competitor. But Coke forgot that it was the real thing. So you got to know what you're really selling. That's the second mistake that most entrepreneurs make. They don't know what they're really selling. And the third one, I would say, and this is a big one, they suffer from what I call professionalitis. Accountants, corporate executives, coaches, oh my God. They look the same, they sound the same, they speak the same, either corporate gobbledygook or coach speak, you know, break through the barriers. They're interchangeable. They focus too much on appearing professional and way too little on showing their brand's personality. Business has so many rules. The great thing about show business is that the only rule is you got to break all the rules.
Well, excellent. So what does character development mean, and how can it help you develop your brand?
Well, character development, if you were cast in a role in a movie or a TV show, you'd be asking yourself, or maybe you'd ask the director, what does this character look like? What does this character sound like? What does he say? How does he say it? What does he act like? What's his backstory, right? What led him to where he is today? That's what you would be asking the director. You know, there's a joke in theater. The actor asks his director, well, what's my motivation? And the answer the director gives them is to get paid. And in business, that's the real answer. There are all kinds of questions that business owners and brand people should be asking themselves. So you really got to ask yourself, what is your distinct persona in the marketplace? What is your distinct character? Like, for example, Al Pacino and Richard Simmons would never be up for the same part in a movie. Never, right? Can you imagine Al Pacino sweating to the oldies like Richard Simmons? No. So you got to develop a character the way Henry Winkler, remember a long time ago in Did you ever see Happy Days?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. So he played Fonzie, right? Henry Winkler was supposed to be a little bit part. And what happened was he added so much flavor and character, and he was originally wearing this cotton jacket. He changed to a black leather jacket. He had this kind of attitude, you know, I'm no choir boy kind of attitude. I'm a bad boy. And the same thing that Johnny Cash did with, his persona. And all of a sudden, it really resonated, and Fonzie became such a star that they wanted to rename it Fonzie's Happy Days. He was humble enough to say, you know, don't do that, but So that's how it can help you develop a brand. And you really also have to pay attention to continuity of your brand and make sure that, like, for example, Unilever has been accused of lack of continuity for its brand because it sells Dove, which is all about campaign for real beauty and, you know, the beauty within and all that stuff. And then the same company also sells SlimFast. Same company also sells Axe, which, you know, are totally different brands. So you really got to make sure there's some continuity in your brand as well.
All right, so why are stories important to business?
Well, stories are really, really important to business because when you come right down to it, that's what people are really buying. They're buying the story behind your brand. Why else would somebody pay $4 for a cup of coffee, you know, at one place, like at Starbucks, when you can buy a cup of coffee at any donut store for $1, right? Or you can probably make it at home for $0.25. So why are they paying the extra $3? They're paying the extra $3 for the story. You know, maybe it's called Paradiso. Maybe it makes you feel adventurous. Maybe It makes you forget the pile of paperwork sitting on your desk at home. Shoes, it's the same thing, running shoes. You know, you could probably buy a very similar pair of running shoes to some of the expensive brands for about $8-$10, right? But some people spend $100, $200 on a pair of running shoes. Why? Because it's got a brand like, you know, that says just do it or go for it. So what they're really buying is the story behind the brand. They're buying, Seth Godin actually made that point about Puma running shoes. They're buying the inspiration. They're buying the just do it. They're buying the feeling that if they wear these running shoes, they're invincible and they can do anything. And the reason stories are so important in business is because stories sneak past the barriers that prospects put up, because prospects are sick of being sold to. We're all sick of being sold to, right? But if you tell a good story, it creates connection. People listen. They're entertaining. The prospects get interested. They get involved. They create intimacy. So they don't feel defensive, right? And you can sneak past the barriers that people put up. And the other thing that is so great about stories is they differentiate you from your competition. They make you easier to remember. Instead of a list of benefits, you know, a lot of these, you go to a networking meeting and entrepreneurs will stand up and list what's so great about them, or on a TV commercial, they list the benefits. Well, people don't remember that, but a good story that demonstrates your benefits, people will remember. So that's why stories are so important.
Well, what are some things that to keep in mind when telling stories?
Well, when you're telling a story, name the people. You know, Joe, Sister Mary Catherine. By the way, when you're in doubt, throw in some nuns to the story. People love stories with nuns. Paint a picture in your stories. Use words like paintbrushes. Make us see it. And make it colorful and put yourself in the story. Create suspense in your stories. Use humor in your stories. Tell the truth in your stories. Here's a revolutionary concept. you know how most cough syrup tastes pretty rotten. I don't know if you have this in the U.S., but in Canada we have a cough syrup, and it's called Buckley's Mixture, and they have this great tagline. It's it tastes awful, and it works. So how brilliant is that? I mean, they were just so honest with us by admitting that it tastes awful. So why would they start lying to us now? It must work, right? Because they admitted their flaw, they admitted their vulnerability, and they also said that it works. So truth is a very, very effective marketing tool when you're telling your stories. And you know what? Even in the election, when you saw the election between Obama and McCain, he used that technique of naming people. You know, Joe the plumber. I just saw 2 days ago the State of the Union address, or recently. What he did was he picked out particular people in the audience, and he said, like so-and-so who drilled a hole to help the miners in Chile, you know, get out, and so-and-so who did that. So he made, instead of just preaching at us, he told individual little stories, and he named the people, and he described where they work, and now they're, you know, more memorable to us, and he sounds less boring.
In your book, Step Into the Spotlight, you talk about the importance of having a 30-second introduction or infomercial. Is it really possible to attract a new client in just 30 seconds?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've over the, you know, 8-9 years I've been in business, I've probably, maybe almost half my clients have attracted in just a 30-second networking infomercial. It's, you know, business people are always saying, it's all about long-term relationships. You can't get a client in 30 seconds. People are always saying that, but you know, it's kind of like that Roger Bannister thing. You know how for, you know, a zillion years everybody said that it's impossible to run a 4-minute mile, you can't do it, you know, your body will explode. That's what, you know, medicine thought until that time. Until in 1954, Roger Bannister did it. And, you know, a year later, I think another 300 people had done it by then because they understood it can be done. So let me be your Roger Bannister. You absolutely can. If you make your 30-second infomercial or your 30-second intro interesting. It's a mini show. It's not a shopping list of information. It's not a list of features and benefits. You got to wow your audience. You give them a story. You make them realize that they're thirsty for what you're selling. If you do your job well, you'll get a lineup when you're done speaking, and people will want to know more.
You talk about having a distinct look, and you mentioned Johnny Cash earlier. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, okay, there are a lot of country singers out there. But he had a distinct look, a distinct persona. He had a low voice. He and his band, they all wore black. And he had some silly little story about how that was the only thing they had that matched, which is a cute story. But it was probably really because they wanted to look like they were tough guys. And then he recorded an album, and his record company thought he was crazy, but he recorded a live album at Folsom Prison with, you know, maximum security inmates. And it was a huge hit, Live at Folsom Prison, or whatever the name of it was. And then they had, or maybe it was Folsom Prison Blues, I don't know. And then they had Live at San Quentin, another album. So it was all consistent with his persona. And that's what entrepreneurs need to do, business people, and even not business people. I mean, even just people who want to get to be, you know, noticed in some other way. You know, they want to be the head of the PTA, or they want to, anybody who, I've even been interviewed by a dating site, you know, somebody's writing an article, because it's all about doing things to create a distinct impression in the marketplace.
You suggest using humor, but what if you're not funny?
Well, humor is not just jokes. Humor is a state of mind. It's a spontaneity, an openness, an honesty, a recognition of universal truth, common experience. I mean, you know, when you watch Seinfeld, and or when it used to be on, and he's got an episode about, you know, having a reservation for a rental car, and he shows up to get it, and it's not there, and it's not ready for him, or they don't have any cars. And he said, but I have a reservation. And they say, yeah, but I'm sorry, sir, we're out of them. And he goes, well, isn't kind of the whole point of a reservation that you have the car? And, you know, or when he goes to a Chinese food restaurant, he has to wait half an hour, and the whole episode is about waiting in the lobby. We laugh not because he's telling funny jokes. We laugh because we've all been there, right? There was a movie in the 80s called Punchline with Sally Field and Tom Hanks, and she was a housewife who paid $500 to try to buy some jokes for this comedy club, and this Tom Hanks character, and she bombed. It didn't work. And this Tom Hanks character tried to teach her, which is what I'm trying to teach entrepreneurs. It's not about standing there and telling, you know, silly little jokes. It's about telling your story and telling it in such an open, honest way that people recognize their story. For example, I wrote a song called Broccoli's on Sale at Dominion, which was about my Jewish mother. And I had people coming up to me, you know, of every nationality, Filipinos and Norwegians. And, you know, I had a Chinese bass player. And they would all say, that's my mother. You know, so when you create a persona and you use humor, it goes way beyond any kind of barrier, and it really resonates with people. So you don't have to worry at all about being funny, and you definitely don't want to be corny. You don't want to be goofy, but witty is always good.
What are some examples of people or brands or companies successfully using show business tactics?
Show business tactics. Okay, well, I told you about Mac and Apple, and Steve Jobs really understands the power of stories. There's Emeril Lagasse. He's a chef. He was just a regular chef, and he used so much humor. The first time I saw him, I thought he was a comedian who was a guest on a cooking show. I didn't realize he was a chef who had a good sense of humor. He created his own lines, which is another great show business technique. You want to have your own lines. He says, kick it up a notch, or bam, or, you know, from, what's that, Survivor. They have that show about, you know, voting somebody off the island, or Donald Trump, you're fired. Okay, so having a line that you repeat is a really great show business tactic. Another one is there's a company in Canada called Roots. I'm not sure if you have it in the U.S., but they make clothing and shoes and things like that. They understand the celebrity factor. They hang out with celebrities, and they get them to wear the Roots clothing, and then the celebrity rubs off on you. So that's another show business tactic. There's a guy named Kylie Warren, who understands the power of a good tagline. He renamed his company. He was a really struggling handyman until he renamed his company Rent-A-Husband, and he came up with a really great tagline, tall, dark, and handy. And all of a sudden, now that he had the line, he's doing really, really, really well in his business. I think he even had a regular guest spot on a national TV show. Wendy's used humor in those Where's the Beef commercials. Philip Morris in the Marlboro Man commercials and in the Virginia Slims commercials, they know how to build brand personality. You know, they're both just cigarettes, right? A Marlboro or a Virginia Slim. It's both just some, you know, tobacco in a case or whatever you call that. But they created, those are two distinct brand personalities, two distinct personas, and that's what I was talking about earlier. So there's tons and tons and tons of great examples out there.
Why are some professionals hesitant to employ show tactics?
Well, that's such a great question, Stacey, because I'll tell you the answer. Why? Because they're scared. They're scared that they might look stupid. I mean, they secretly want to get noticed, right? But they're also afraid to look different. And this is really, really, I mean, you find this with, you know, especially in corporate, with you know, accountants, especially with independent professionals and coaches and trainers. They're all kind of afraid of taking the risk. You have to have a thick skin to be a star. You might be out of fashion for a while. And if you're an employee, there is a real risk. I mean, you know, if you're an employee and you employ some of these tactics, one of two things might happen. You might get fired, or you might get the corner office, you know, and get a promotion, because there is a risk. I mean, there's a company out there, it's called Big Ass Fans. Big Ass Fans. Well, what do they sell? They sell fans, big fans that would be in a big auditorium somewhere. A lot of people hate their name. They find it very, very offensive. And they get hate mail, which they proudly post on their website. But for every, you know, piece of hate mail they get tons of fan mail as well. And, you know, when I studied it, they went from $7.4 million in revenue to $26.9 million in just 3 years. Why? Because they took a stand and they used these showbiz tactics.
Well, Sufit, can you give our readers or listeners three tips that they can put into action right away?
Absolutely. Okay, three things. Number one, figure out what you're really selling, okay? So if you're an insurance salesman, you know, what are you really selling? Now, they all say peace of mind, security, whatever, but you know who was brilliant when it came to that? There's this company that sells, it's actually a mutual funds company, and they wanted to convey this message that you got to take care of your future, right? So they had this print ad. It's called Altamira, the company. It was later bought by a national bank. But anyway, they had this print ad which showed this kind of 87-year-old granny, gray-haired woman wearing a Walmart smock, you know, like those greeters wear. And the copy underneath it said, "Is continuing to work part of your retirement plan?" Brilliant. Brilliant. You know, remember the babies in the tire swings, you know, because a lot is riding on your tires. So they were selling safety and peace of mind. So figure out what you're really selling. That's tip number one. Number two, figure out your story and connect it to what you're selling and dig really deep and look for color. I had a client who once came to me to help her with one of her speeches. It was kind of a dry how-to speech to promote her speaker's bureau. She wasn't a professional speaker herself, but she was speaking to a group of professional speakers, and so she was kind of scared. So when I interviewed her, I found out that she grew up on a tomato farm and that when she was just eight, she used to help her dad pick tomatoes and take them to market. And I said, well, tomatoes are colorful, so why don't you use this analogy? She did, and she said, some speakers are still too green, some are still seedlings, others are ripe and plump and juicy and ready for market, while others are just plain rotten. So she got a ton of people interested in speaking to her afterwards for the first time in her life. So that's the second tip. Figure out your story and connect your story to what you're selling. And the third tip is to write a 30-second spot, like we said, a little mini show to tell your story. Now, it doesn't work very well one-on-one to do this 30 seconds because it just feels dopey and it doesn't feel real. And I've seen people do that. Don't do that. If you're talking one-on-one, then just have a short little tagline. But if you have an audience, you know, at the Chamber of Commerce, 20, 30 people, then have this little mini show ready. These are three things that you guys can go and do right away. If you're not sure how to do them, then pick up Step Into the Spotlight and it'll show you how. And go out there and step into the spotlight.
What's the most valuable piece of advice that you can give anyone who is trying to make an impact?
Okay, well, this is something I learned both as a litigation lawyer and as an actress in show business. You got to know when to sit down and shut up.
Great advice. Sufit, thank you so much for being on our show tonight. I really enjoyed all the fabulous information that you shared.
Oh, pleasure. My pleasure.
If anyone wants to know how to find you, where do they need to go?
Well, they can go to stepintothespotlight.com to find me and find out about me. And if they want some free tips, 11 free tips on how to stand out and do what we discussed today, they can go to secretsfromthespotlight.com. That's secrets with an S, plural. secretsfromthespotlight.com. Put your name and email in there, and I'll send you 11 free tips on how to stand out when you introduce yourself.
Excellent. Well, I'll have to go and check those out. If you would like more information about Sufite, please go to the GetEI.com website. That's GETEI.com, where you can find out more information about her and her website and where to go get those 11 tips. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on Right Now. Have an excellent and productive week.